one confesses his or her wrong, then healing begins and reconciliation starts. And I guess that's where we start with Liberia, with Taylor.
You started having troops, and these weren't new troops. Some of them were sergeants who were saying, yeah, I have a pack of cards, and my aces are George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, and Richard Pearl.
Come and arrest me for my job because I'm illegal in the country. My family won't be allowed to come with me to the airport to say goodbye, and I don't know what I'm going to be doing with my three kids over here looking behind with nothing.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Monday, August 11th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. American troops swooped into a remote Iraqi village aboard Black Hawk helicopters today in search of a member of Saddam Hussein's inner circle. They couldn't find him, but rounded up about 70 suspects. North of Baghdad, meanwhile, three American soldiers were wounded in a grenade attack a day after a U.S. military policeman was killed in a bombing. Three soldiers from the 4th Infantry Division were wounded today after guerrillas ambushed their patrol in Shumat, just north of Tikrit. Spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Bill McDonald reported all three were in stable condition. The killing of the U.S. military policeman occurred last night at an Iraqi police station near Bakoba, 40 miles northeast of the capital. He said, we had a suspicious package dropped off at the Bakoba police headquarters, and an MP with the task force went out to investigate it. The MP was seriously wounded in the blast and evacuated to a military hospital, but died of his wounds. Two other MPs were wounded but were in stable condition today. The death brought to 57 the number of U.S. troops killed in action since May 1st, when President Bush declared major combat was over. In central Baghdad, two grenades were thrown from a car at U.S. military police manning a checkpoint today, according to witnesses. The soldiers returned fire, killing one Iraqi. The witnesses said no U.S. casualties were reported. Also today, the president of the U.S. PICT Governing Council announced the interim government had postponed appointing cabinet ministers for 3 weeks. Ibrahim al-Jafari, council president for August, said a 25-member committee will be formed soon to choose the Constitutional Assembly. He gave no dates. Stepping beyond the bounds of Europe for the first time in its 54-year history, NATO took command today of the 5,000-strong peacekeeping force in Afghanistan, the clearest sign yet that the world's most powerful military alliance is adopting new strategies in the global war on terror. The handover ceremony took place at a heavily guarded high school auditorium in the Afghan capital of Kabul. NATO Deputy Secretary General Alessandro Minuto Rizzo called the new mission a reflection of NATO's ongoing transformation and resolve to meet the security challenges of the 21st century. Liberian President Charles Taylor stepped down from power this afternoon and boarded an airplane bound for Nigeria, where he's been granted asylum by Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo. Taylor's reaction, or action rather, effectively brings an end to Liberia's 14-year civil war with leaders of the opposition group Liberians United for Reconciliation and Democracy, saying the suffering of Liberians is finally over. Before leaving office, Taylor addressed his nation and the world, saying that by stepping down, he was giving way to a new, more peaceful chapter in Liberian history.
It is essential, exceptionally essential, that the international community accept this challenge today as an opportunity to help the people of Liberia at least once. The last time around, we did not have the opportunity. Now you have no excuses. We beg of you, we plead with you not to make this another press event where you come, the big pronouncements, you're out of here, elections are held, you are gone, disarmament, partial demobilization never taking place, reintegration never occurring, thus leading to a renewed war and asking another president to leave. You must now seize this opportunity to help Liberia. History will be kind to me. I have fulfilled my duties in the interest of the Liberian people. The presidency is not important. It's not important. Could we continue fighting? Yes. But above all else, the people must matter. And so I have accepted this role, what I would say as the sacrificial lamb. And you know, I'm a Christian, so forgive me. I see myself as during the days when Jesus was taken before the high priest Caiaphas. And you know, Jesus was without sin. And Caiaphas looked at him and said, well, it may be expedient that you should die. And now, because Jesus died, we are saved today. I want to be the sacrificial lamb. I am the whipping boy. You know, it's so easy to say because of Taylor. There will be no more Taylor after a few minutes. And now, the Liberian people need the good. Please. Yesterday, for me, it was a statement of fact. I may have stepped on a few toes, but I don't care. Because history must show the facts. Today, that's behind us. We want to see Liberia move forward. We want you to come in and help us and embrace us. The Liberian people have suffered far too long.
Former Liberian President Charles Taylor today leaving his position. For reaction to this latest turn of events, Peace Watch spoke with Bishop Ronald Diggs, the former interim vice president of Liberia.
My reaction is that I wish he was truly a sacrificial boy, a sacrificial lamb and a whipping boy. Had he been dead, we wouldn't have gone this far. Everything would have ended in 1990. But he isn't. He's only saying that. That's how Taylor talks. Secondly, when he talk about the people should come in now and do what they can for Liberia, is an opportunity. When he was elected in 1997, there was the opportunity for disarmament, demobilization, and all of these were put in place. But he blocked everything. He forced the ECOMO group out of Liberia. They had to leave. He took his fighters and put them in the army. He took away the Liberian regular army soldiers and replaced them with his boys. So he cannot blame anybody for that. Right now, it's because of his refusal to let the international community do what it should have done at the time that led to all of these. And I guess that is why they kept saying, unless he steps down and leaves the country, because they know that he will be this obstacle to any type of program they want to have in it. And I would like to say here that calling himself sacrificial is a pity that he will compare himself with Jesus Christ, because there is no way he comes close to, or anybody on earth for that matter, can come close to Jesus, even though he says he's a Christian. But some of the acts he has carried out and the way he has treated people is not Christian. Mm. Then he say he may have stepped on a few toes, but that doesn't matter. Well, he didn't step on a few toes. He really hurt many Liberians. Those he arrested without trial and just jailed. Those he killed, he saw two that were killed just like that. I mean, that's more than just stepping on a few toes. He should admit what he did, and I think that is what they called reconciliation, healing and reconciliation. When one confesses his or her wrong, and then the people that have been wrong accept that confession, then healing begins and reconciliation starts. And I guess that's where we start with Liberia, with Taylor. But I do not accept what he's saying as true.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate, but that's the fact.
He talked about disarmament and demobilization. Do you think there's an opportunity at this point, Bishop Ronald Diggs, as given your knowledge and your expertise as the former interim vice president, do you think that these are programs that can be put forth at this time with the new administration that will be entering?
Yeah, I think they can be put together. They can work. Disarmament, demobilization can take place.
What is meant by demobilization?
It means that all those people who are with arms and are fighting will now be brought out of the bushes and so on, and disarmed and then put into some type of training, whatever it is that they can give them that will be of benefit to them in the future.
Mm-hmm. CNN is reporting that 3 U.S. warships have appeared off the Liberian coast, poised to possibly land ashore and provide humanitarian assistance. What do you believe the U.S. role should be at this stage in the game?
Well, we are seeing at this stage, but I had hope since 1990 when they had the ship off the shores of Liberia and some of their men on the ground, and wherever they went, there was complete peace. We wish they had remained there in 1990. Then we wouldn't have come this far. But you see, they've allowed it to go so far, and now it's an ambulance service that they're coming to render. But as Liberians, we cannot help it but to accept at this stage, because we are at their mercy. But I'm saying that 1990, they should have come in and help instead of withdrawing their men and taking them to the Gulf. And we wouldn't have come this far. So many people wouldn't have died. So many people wouldn't be in refugee camps and displaced centers.
Hmm. Now, what about the issue of charging President Taylor with war crimes? Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo has granted asylum to Taylor, but he has said he will not hand Taylor over to a U.N. court that has charged him with war crimes. And you spoke earlier of the healing process needing some sort of confession on the part of Taylor before healing can take place. What do you think should happen?
Well, with respect to this war crime, anybody can be charged with war crime or a criminal act. What is necessary is that the person appears and defends himself or herself before whatever court it is. But to evade it and to leave it alone and to say, no, I'm not appearing. One time you say, no, I cannot appear before that court, and it is this. And another time you sending to the World Court and asking the World Court to see that this crime is withdrawn from you is a double standard for me. But I think that if Taylor is sincere about the fact that he didn't do anything and he's not part of the problem that was in Sierra Leone, he should show himself as an honest person before the court in Sierra Leone with his legal defendants. And defend himself. And I don't think the court will just arrest him and jail him and ill-treat him without giving him proper trial. And for me, it's not only Taylor alone. There are many others, and I guess that's why most people are saying the war crime should be withdrawn, because there are many others who may be charged with the same thing later on.
Mm. We hear that former Vice President Moses Blah will take control of the country now in President Taylor's absence. What can you tell us about Blah, and are you confident in his leadership abilities to bring Liberia through what is more than likely to be an extremely difficult period of transformation?
Well, to be frank, I don't know very much about Moses Blah. I got to hear about Moses Blah during the time Taylor was moving throughout the country with his army. And later on, Moses Blah was sent to, he was one of those trained in Libya. He fought along with Taylor. He was later sent to Libya to serve as the Liberian ambassador to Libya. That is all I know about him until he was called to take the place to become vice president when the former vice president, Dokolia, died. So I don't know very much about him, but given the situation as it is, I think Moses Blah should have experienced a lot of the problems, and he knows exactly what the problems are. If he truly wants to make a change, he should go back and let those problems that were faced in the past become a lesson to him, and he should begin to listen to other people rather than arresting people because of what they say and jailing them or trying not even trying them or ill-treating them, manhandling them without any trial, but that he will begin now to use the legal system as it should be used for carrying out any kind of trial or legal activity that is within the country. But I don't think that he has too much right now. He has a long time right now to do anything if he is going to be there until October. All he will be able to do is to maybe round up his fighters, their fighters, and tell them to stop fighting and to observe peace, and that it is time for the Liberians to rest from war and enjoy themselves as they move on to the transition in maybe October, I don't know, whatever time it would be.
You spoke earlier of 17 political parties and a great deal of work that needs to be done in terms of Liberians unifying themselves. How do you suggest your country go about accomplishing that rather large, awesome mandate in the short time frame that is before them, October?
Well, when I spoke of that, I didn't mean between now and October, because I know it would take a very, very long time for this process to go through, because it's a whole process. But I was speaking in terms of, first of all, beginning now, and then continuing even within the transitional period. And after the transitional period, when we have an elected government, that elected government will put a lot of time into this whole area of reconciliation, healing and reconciliation. And that will require a lot of work on bringing groups together, various tribal leaders together, and taking them from one place to the other, and trying to help have them understand and accept each other, so that there won't be this type of hate that we have now. And it will also mean bringing people together so that they realize that the country is bigger than the tribe, than the county, than the district, than the section, than the ethnic group. And that's what we need to do in Liberia. And most of our people, frankly, the illiteracy rate is so high that it will have to cost a good bit of money to accomplish this. And I hope that whoever comes in as the transitional leader will put forth effort and will impress the international community with this type of program, so that they will fund it. Because people will be ready to fund infrastructures. They are good to fund the infrastructure. But you can fund those infrastructures, and as long as you do not fund the human relationship so that it is established, maybe 10 years down the road again, those same infrastructure will be broken down, because relationships have not been built from one group to the other.
Okay. Bishop Ronald Diggs, former interim vice president of Liberia. Any final thoughts on your part, Bishop?
Well, the only final thoughts I will have is that Liberians should now, we've been blaming Taylor, and everything was Taylor. But one man is never the key person in causing the trouble. we all are part of it, either because we have not talked or because we have not actively taken part in anything, and because we are not ready to unite ourselves. And I will call on Liberians to unite themselves. Since Taylor has given us way and we've been blaming him, it's time now that we unite ourselves and move forward and stop complaining and blaming leaders all the time. This we need to really take into serious consideration.
Bishop Ronald Diggs is former interim vice president of Liberia. We reached him at his home in Trenton, New Jersey. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. It's your financial support that makes Peace Watch possible, so we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at www.pacifica.org. That's www.pacifica.org. More than 300 activists protested U.S. nuclear policy at the Y-12 facility in Oak Ridge, Tennessee on Sunday to commemorate the bombing of Hiroshima on August 6, 1945. The crowd at this year's protest was varied, and at some points, tempers flared. Kim Green was in Oak Ridge and has this report.
And what we're trying to keep from happening is a nuclear reaction. If we can do that, that'd be awesome. So it's good to see all these people out here supporting.
On a sweltering afternoon, amid threatening thunderstorms and blustery winds, protesters gather on a hill overlooking the entrance to the Y-12 nuclear facility at Oak Ridge National Laboratories. For 15 years running, activists have journeyed from all over the region in early August to register their discontent with what they regard as a U.S. violation of the 1996 Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Amanda Martin, a South Carolina activist, speaks against weapons production at Y-12 and at Savannah River in her home state.
What we did, we're the only country that has ever used nuclear weapons, ever. And we have 10 to 12,000 weapons that are usable nuclear weapons here in the United States. And under Article 6 of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, we are dedicated to non-proliferation of nuclear weapons, and now we want to build more? That's a total violation of international law. And what is higher, the law of the United States?
A few hundred yards down the road, a much smaller group of anti-protesters crank up World War II-era tunes and military marches, sporting uniforms, flags, and a sign that reads, "The Lord is a man of war," Exodus 15:3. Mike Quick, a chemical worker from Y-12 and a Navy veteran, is a member of a group called Citizen Soldiers for the Atomic Bomb.
I get tired of being told we should feel ashamed for one of the greatest achievements of the 20th century. The atomic bomb saved more lives than they ever took.
Chanting Buddhist monks lead the colorful procession through a shower of vitriol. The Bible weighs in on both sides of the argument. One garish sign decorated with a billowing mushroom cloud reads, "Love your enemies." As protesters quietly empty small black sacks of ash over the gate, symbolizing the victims of Hiroshima, one elderly Navy veteran silently holds aloft U.S. and POW MIA flags. Later, he engages a young woman in heated debate.
If we throw away our nuclear capability, a foreign power will take the United States, and this is what I fought for. It was for our freedom, your freedom, and my freedom, okay? And to tell them.
But what we have right now is overkill.
A group of religious activists from many denominations carries a mock coffin to the barricade. Father Tom Lumpkin has traveled from Detroit, Michigan, to make a statement.
The important thing for me would be to do something that would at least for a while close down this plant. We realize that we're just a few people and our efforts are small, and whatever we're able to do successfully will only be for a time being. But that's what we want to try to do. What we hope to accomplish today is to shut down entrance access into this plant for as much time as we can.
Stephen Wyatt, spokesman for the Department of Energy, says that since September 11, trespass onto federal property is a serious offense carrying penalties as high as $100,000 and up to 6 months in prison. He adds that Y-12 isn't adding weapons to the U.S. arsenal.
We remanufacture nuclear weapons components. Taking existing weapons out of the stockpile and remanufacture for other purposes, primarily for the purpose of extending the life of that particular unit.
Protesters counter that remanufacturing weapons is a waste of resources and that extending the life of those weapons is a continuing threat to human life.
Moral authority.
Around 3 o'clock, Father Lumpkin and four fellow protesters chain the gates and block access to the Y-12 plant. Although they don't cross the blue line, the activists receive a warning from local authorities.
My name's Sergeant Breeden. I'm with the Oak Ridge Police Department. If you choose not to leave the roadway, you'll be arrested for blocking a public roadway. Do you understand?
By day's end, Oak Ridge City Police arrest five protesters for blocking the roadway, a state misdemeanor. The monk's somber cadence competes with a recording of taps playing in the background. One veteran shouts through a bullhorn, "You lose, we win." The plant's still open, as both crowds disperse. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Kim Green in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
In Bath, Maine, on Saturday, on the anniversary of the dropping of the atomic bomb on Nagasaki, Japan, the U.S. Navy dedicated the newest ship in its fleet, a nuclear-capable destroyer costing $750 million. But outside the gates of the shipyard, protesters gathered to demand that the resources necessary to build such a weapon be spent instead on social needs. David Goodman has this report.
This is the story of two ships and two very different heroes. Father Philip Berrigan and Vice Admiral Charles Swede Momsen, two men dedicated to protecting our nation in very different ways. On Saturday at the Bath Ironworks along the Kennebec River in south coastal Maine, the Navy honored Admiral Momsen by naming its newest Aegis-class destroyer after him, a ship capable of being outfitted with nuclear missiles. Admiral Momsen, decorated for his service during World War II, helped develop an artificial lung that was used to rescue more than 30 sailors trapped on a sunken submarine in 1939. In a park nearly within earshot of the shipbuilding facility, peace activists christened their own ship, a donated 18-foot-long lobster boat named in honor of Philip Berrigan, the Josephite Catholic priest and anti-nuclear weapons activist who died last December. Berrigan helped launch the Plowshares movement, whose members protest weapons of mass destruction by pouring their own blood on nuclear warheads. Berrigan's widow, Elizabeth McAllister, asked those gathered in the park to consider why the U.S. continues to build such weapons as this new destroyer.
And the question is, how did we go so wrong? How did we go so wrong as to celebrate the launching of a ship like the one that's being celebrated today? To put all of our energy, all of our money, all of our best brains into the creation of this kind of weapon of mass destruction. And I think the thing I want to hold up as perhaps a serious contributing factor to our letting things get this bad, it's fear, isn't it? And it's the way this government has learned to both create and orchestrate that fear and keep us like puppets on a string as it pulls forth. Now, you got to be afraid of the communists. You've got to be afraid of the Soviet Union. You've got to be afraid of terrorists. You've got to be afraid of everybody who's different. And perhaps today what we want to say is that we will not be afraid.
In an eerie echo of McAllister's words, Maine Congressman Thomas Allen lauded the expertise of the Bath Ironworks.
This is a vessel that exemplifies what BIW does best. Cutting-edge technology, traditional quality, and peak efficiency. Today, as our country faces hostilities around the globe, having these Maine-made ships at sea is a source of great pride and reassurance.
Members and supporters of Veterans for Peace and other social justice organizations couldn't disagree more with the congressman. They believe the millions of people worldwide who protested the invasion of Iraq and militarism in general want reassurance that diplomacy will gradually displace war as a tool of foreign policy. Kathy Boyland, a member of the Catholic Worker Movement in Washington, D.C., watched as a dozen protesters were arrested for blocking the gates of the shipyard. Boyland thinks local Bath residents, many of whom support the shipyard and the jobs it creates, should consider both the domestic and global consequences of this work.
Well, we have a clear choice today. It's a choice between, as Dr. King said, between nonviolence and non-existence. Unfortunately, people who are going in, who are shouting things against us, don't see the truth that unless we disarm, we're going to destroy the planet. And, you know, just we also say to workers here and loved ones here that we want people to have jobs, but there are many more jobs if we spend $1 million on health care and housing. We'd create far more jobs. So we're not against people working. We're just against death, a death that will kill the people who are working here also.
Changing federal budget priorities is critical, say peace activists. When Congress returns from its summer break, $800 billion will be divided up among its appropriations committees, at least $400 billion of which is expected to go to the military. Reporting from Bath, Maine, I'm Dave Goodman.
This is Anthony Sloan, a.k.a. T, from the Pattersons Taking a Train to Tibet, the engineer and sometimes sound gatherer for Pacifica's Peace Watch. I do hope you are being informed by our efforts here. If you find what we do valuable, please make a financial commitment to Peace Watch, so we may continue our work on your behalf. Kindly make a secure online pledge by visiting our website at pacifica.org. That's pacifica.org. Or you may send us a tax-exempt donation via check or money order. Addressed to Peace Watch, care of Pacifica, 2390, that's 2390 Champlain Street, Champlain Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. Thank you so much for your support. And we'll see you on the front lines. Peace.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.